Welcome to the Gaming Uncensored Roundtable.
Hey, what is up? Welcome to the December Roundtable for Gaming Uncensored. We have an exciting show today. We've got a good crew with us. We'll go around the table really quick. First of all, of course, I'm Tommy. Jamie sitting over there. How you doing, Jamie?
What's up? We're back.
We're back. We've also got Josh this month. How are you doing, Josh?
Hey, I'm doing good. Getting ready for Christmas, but doing good.
Awesome. Warm Christmas in Australia. Different than some of us over here. Speaking of, we also have Spencer, who's currently 30 below zero. Is that right?
Something around there. You just stop caring after a while.
And then we also have our boy Chad. How are you doing, Chad?
What's up? I forgot to tell you guys, from going forward, you have to call me C-Rad or something like that.
C-Rad.
I need a cool name.
I feel like you Dragon. Try it.
I'll be Dragon. Is that okay?
It's better than C-Rad. No, by the way, no crazy nicknames today. This is just all normal names on the show today.
That's true.
So you fit right in. So congratulations.
I just have to say I will never, ever, ever use C-Rad. Thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. So good attempt. Good attempt. Topic for this week or this month's roundtable is storylines and video games and what those mean and how they've changed and what games we've played recently or ever that have great stories or terrible stories but are still good games and just on and on. And so we're going to just kind of open up, have a good conversation around that. So let me start with Chad. I'll make you go first this month. Just what does story in video games mean to you? And I know this from knowing kind of some of the games that you've played. I know you're a huge fan of like The Last of Us and Uncharted and that kind of stuff. So I'm assuming story is somewhat important in that context. And so what does a story in a game mean to you? How important is that when you're considering what you're going to spend time playing?
For me, it's the ultimate. As I've gotten, I mean, I'll be 40 here in 2017. So for me, if I'm going to sit down and really, I don't have so much time to read. I used to be a huge reader. I love movies. If I'm going to play a game, I don't want to just run around and jump and if I can get over that box and solve that puzzle.
Dude, he's totally slamming Nintendo right now. That's what he's doing right now.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, not Nintendo, but I mean, a lot of these retro games and stuff, people losing their minds over these 2D retro games, they're just not for me. You know, like, I want to immerse myself in something. Like you obviously mentioned The Last of Us. I just got the PS4 Pro the other day and I'm going to replay it for like the fifth time because I want to see the 60 frame per second and everything, but also because I love that story so much and love Naughty Dogs. And I just replayed all of the Nathan Drake collection and all that stuff as well. But last night, like, my kids sat around me while I played Batman Episode 5. So the family can actually, with several of those games, a lot of the time when I'm sitting and I'm playing, my kids will sit on the couch and watch me kill zombies or something like that. Father of the Year. But like Batman, we played for an hour and a half, wherever, Episode 5 last night, and they watched it like they're watching a movie and enjoy it. You know, oh, Dad, are you making this choice or what? You know, what are your choices and everything? So for me, story-driven stuff is I buy my games 99% based upon that.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up Batman because I was actually going to bring it up for this show. That's one thing that I love about the Telltale games, all of them, whether it's The Walking Dead or Batman or The Wolf Among Us, the stories are great, and the stories are what makes you want to play it. So I definitely wanted to mention those because when we started playing those, that's not something that I expected, but they are great.
Yeah.
And you don't do Telltale for gameplay. I mean, it's all about story.
Right.
That's the exact point I was going to make. They kind of suck as games, really. They're just, either quick time events or dialogue choices, like as a just pure gameplay mechanic, they're not terribly interesting, but they're awesome. Like, I'm going to play Batman. I'm going to play Walking Dead. I love the first two seasons of the Walking Dead stuff. Like, it's really, really good. Spencer, same idea to you. How much does the story in a game go into what you play, what you choose to play?
It's a good one. I played through Metro, both of those, the other couple months ago. Those are good. Story based. What else have I played through recently? I'm playing through Rise of Tomb Raider right now.
I think the Tomb Raider is interesting because when I think of a story-based game, I don't really think of Tomb Raider, but it kind of is. That's a good example.
And I think it's taken a turn to be more, trying to be more Uncharted, which is weird to say, right? That Uncharted was trying to be Tomb Raider, but now Tomb Raider is trying to be Uncharted in a way. But I think it's just evolved because that's where games are now. Narrative and very cinematic games. I think cinematic is a good word to put in here when we're talking about like the Naughty Dog titles. They're not just story driven, but they're cinematically driven. Like the camera angles and the lighting matter, you know, like it's not just telling a compelling story, but it's telling a compelling story in a way that's framed like a Hollywood movie that works really well. And for the most part, I think people like it, although I could see how like, this is weird to say, but maybe a purist, video game purist, if such a thing exists, would look at that in a negative light, you know, that idea of how cinematic something like Uncharted or Last of Us is. I love it. I get a kick out of those games. So I'm not saying that personally by any means. Josh, what about you? Just your gameplay habits, how much does story play into that?
Yeah, I definitely would agree with Chad. He pretty much touched on a lot of what I agree with. My game time is fairly limited these days, so when there's such a huge selection, like I'll open up my Steam library or whatever, and it's just overwhelming sometimes. But it's almost certainly if something's got a great story, that's going to be what's going to win out. I really like something with a good story. That's what keeps me interested. Something with great characters that I can relate to and empathize with, sympathize with. Everyone, the Uncharteds, all the Naughty Dog games, The Last of Us, those are always going to be good. When I think back as well to other games that have really grabbed me, Red Dead Redemption is one of them. Also, like older adventure type games, The Longest Journey, Dreamfall. All those really, really story driven games.
I still want to play Chapters. Like I'm still looking forward to playing Chapters.
I've got that sitting there. It's really high on my list. It's one of those games. I really just want to make sure I have the time to sit through and properly enjoy it because the previous two were just some of my favorite games. So, but I haven't touched that yet, unfortunately.
I want to bring up something that both Chad and Josh just mentioned, and Spencer also. All of the games that we're talking about, they have great stories. But one other thing that they have that not a lot of games have these days is great pacing. And I think great pacing makes a huge difference because, for example, I'm playing Max Payne 3 now, and Max Payne has never been an Oscar-winning story, but the pacing is great. Like, it's cinematic, not to the level that the rest of those are, but the pacing keeps you in it. And I think whether the story is good or not makes a big difference, but the pacing, to me, in all of those games, makes or breaks it. Because when you sit down to play them, you don't want to put the controller down until it's over.
Yeah, I'll add to that just really briefly to something that I think all of us deal with at this point because we're all getting up there in age. I mean, we're not old, but Chad just said he's about 40, so I think you're the oldest amongst us probably. But we're all right. Sorry about that. But we're all in that situation. Like, we're all grown men that are trying to figure out when to play games amongst other life stuff. And so when I think back to my childhood, and one of the things I love that you said, Chad, was about your kids watching you play. And I think back to like one of my favorite story games was Final Fantasy VII. And the way I played that was sitting with my buddies, you know, like taking turns with the controller and the rest of the time watching it, you know, as a spectator or whatever. But also a game like Final Fantasy VII, whereas I love the story of it, and I could tell you all kinds of random details about the story of it still. Like, a lot of that game was grind. And that's not something we do a lot in games anymore. And in a lot of ways, I'm really grateful for that because I don't have time to grind, you know? Like, I need to get the game rolling. And so that idea of pacing, I think, is really critical. Important part of kind of the evolution of gaming of where we are now, of something like an Uncharted game or even The Witcher or Elder Scrolls or something like that, that you can, or Fallout, that you can spend a whole lot more time in. They've gotten away from grinding. Like, it's still, you're doing a lot of stuff, but it's not just kill enemies to level up.
I'll give you that. I was just going to say, with what you just said, I'll give you that they've gotten away from that, but to me, Fallout, and maybe I haven't played The Witcher 3 yet, so I don't know, but Fallout, like, you can get lost in that thing. Like, there's, I love Fallout, but there's a lot of times that I'm playing Fallout that I wish it had better pace. Like, sure. I don't believe that Fallout is on the same level of some of these other games that we're talking about, and I love Fallout.
Right, not on a sheer pacing thing, because it's an RPG still, the same way with The Witcher 3. But what they do that's different than what Final Fantasy did in its kind of heyday was, you in Final Fantasy, you just had to go kill enemies for an hour to get to the level to progress in the storyline. You don't have to do that in these RPGs anymore. Never in Fallout 4, and Fallout 4 is even less grindy than Fallout 3, which is less grindy than previous RPGs and so forth. Like, you're always doing something that has a purpose. If it's side quests or missions or building your base or whatever, like, you level up. And that's still an important part of kind of game progression. But it's not just the go kill enemies for 2 hours. Like, they make it in a way that you feel like it's still narrative driven, that there's still something that's being accomplished. And I think in our kind of goal-oriented mindset society at this point, that's really important, because if you're going to make me grind a la Final Fantasy, I'm not going to do it at this point. And again, those are some of my favorite games ever. I love them, but I just don't have time to spend my gaming, you know, randomly just looking for encounters with enemies. Well,
and it depends on how they sell it to you, though, because there still is very grindy stuff. I know, like Destiny, they patched a lot of it and made it less grindy, but man, I got over 300 hours in that. But, sure. And the story isn't that great, so that kind of goes against what I said.
It's a little bit of a different beast.
Yeah, but it gave me opportunity to play with my friends. So I wasn't doing, but it was a social thing where my friends were with their kids, and their kids are running around. My kids are running around killing, but we can't be together. But we could on Destiny, you know. And we literally, you run the same strikes. Same thing with the Division. The Division is a big one. Rainbow Six Siege. I mean, those are all kind of in those realm of just, they are fairly grindy, and you're just killing. But we've seen in this season, in this holiday season, where we've had some really good stuff, like Battlefield 1, phenomenal, you know, storytelling. I don't know if you guys have gotten into it at all, but they went through and they went vignette style. So we are getting all these different views of what World War I might have been like through several different eyes of people from different countries and, you know, all allies. But Battlefield 1, even the new Call of Duty, and I haven't played Call of Duty since like Black Ops 2. Like, I think that's the only one I ever played. I don't like Call of Duty. The Infinite Warfighter, is that what it's called? The latest one by Infinity Ward. I've been obsessed with it. Like, because I went through the story mode. I won't play it online. I don't want to play it with other people unless they're my friends. But the story was fantastic, and the gameplay is phenomenal as well.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting dichotomy of it. It's either story-rich, single-player, narrative-driven, or grindy, social-driven. You know, like, if it is going to be that grindy kind of thing, like, hey, let me at least grind it with my buddies. I think there's something totally fair to that for sure.
And another example of that Tommy and I haven't played that we really need to, I was talking to a buddy of mine last night, and he said that he was playing Borderlands 2 with his girlfriend's son. You know, that they were grinding on Borderlands 2. That's another one of those titles, the newer titles that is definitely a co-op driven kind of a thing. And every time I hear that, I'm thinking, me and Tommy really got to play that franchise, and we've never gotten around to it.
Yeah, that's fair. Let me ask. Go ahead.
Yeah, Borderlands is definitely worth picking up. Have I played it? I think I played it on console a long time ago. But yeah, it's definitely worth picking up.
Yeah. It's one of those franchises I've heard nothing but good things about, and it's just in a list of a million other franchises. So let me ask a little bit more difficult of a question as relates to stories in games. What exactly, or how do you define a good story? Like, what is it? Is it characters? Is it plot? Is it narrative? Is it present? Obviously, I think it's going to be, for most of us, a combination of all these things. But what is it in your mind that says, yeah, that story was really good? Or what little things are you looking for? I'll start with Josh on this one.
Apart from the easy answer, which is, you know, a little bit of everything we've spoken about, I think ultimately it's just the way in which I'm engaged as a, I was going to say engaged as the audience, but we're a bit more involved when it comes to video games. So I'll say it's just how it grabs me, how it makes me feel a part of the world and the way in which the character's journey is progressing. I'd like to. There was one example I was thinking of, and it's a little bit different from it. It doesn't really fit into linear narrative based story. But the one that stands out in my recent memory is actually from GTA 5. Which is a little bit weird because I've never particularly been engaged by the story, the overarching main story of GTA. But one thing that grabbed me in Grand Theft Auto 5 was the world in which Rockstar had created and how alive it felt. And what I really liked was lots of the little stories that would just happen every time you played the game. So one of the ones for me was I just jumped in. I think I started playing as Trevor, and I jumped in I was at his trailer, jumped into his car, and I was heading to the middle of Los Santos or something. And as soon as I leave Trevor's place, there's a hitchhiker that's like asking for a ride. So I thought, okay, I'll pick up this hitchhiker. So I picked them up, and I don't know if you remember, but one of the gameplay elements in Grand Theft Auto 5 was if you pick up a hitchhiker as Trevor, you could drop them off. I think, was it the altruists? The people, yeah, the people living in the mountains that were basically like the crazy cults that would, you know, murder and defile people. But I thought, maybe I could take them there. But, oh, look, they're heading in the direction I'm going anyway, so I'll take them where they actually want to go in Los Santos. So I'm driving down the highway, and it was this girl, and she starts telling this story about, I just got blackout drunk last night, I passed out, I woke up in the city, I woke up in the desert, I don't know what happened. And you're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And there's just this conversation as you're driving down the road. And as you get closer to Los Santos, she's like, oh yeah, I'm with this guy, and I'm asking you to take me to his place now, you know. I don't know. I just use him for his money. You know, he's in love with me, so I can do whatever I want and get away with it. And every night I go out and I get drunk and I party and I hook up with a different guy. And, you know, I just go back to this guy to get money and all this sort of thing. And right as I was right at the doorstep to where she was going to go, and then she said that, and I was just like, oh, you know what? You're not really a nice person at all. yeah, it's a it's a stereotypical character, as all Rockstar characters are. But I ripped on the handbrake, did a U-turn, and drove all the way back out again to the country, and thought, right, now I'm going to take you to the Altruist. Right as I get to, you know, it's a long drive. I'm finally about to get to the Altruist place, and she wakes up, and she's like, oh, she's like, where are we? And then you pull up to the Altruist, and she's like, I don't think this is where I wanted to go. And then Trevor says, in what I thought was the best line ever, he says, oh, I'm taking you to exactly the place where you need to be. And then she gets pulled out of the car. And that's actually, it sounds pretty horrible now that you think about it, but I just thought, as a mini story that just sort of popped out.
That's great.
I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, and it's a testament for something like a Rockstar game of how you get to drive the story. Like, that story is yours personally, you know, like you retelling that story is a personal story, which is brilliant. Like, that's what an amazing way. And I have those stories with Grand Theft Auto too, which I think Grand Theft Auto does as good of a job as an open world game can of giving you that control over like your own narrative. That's brilliant. That's awesome. That's so good.
Yeah.
Spencer, same kind of idea to you. What in your mind makes a good story? Like, what are you looking for as a good story in a game?
You want to not stop playing it. You just have to keep. It's the you realize it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you have to work the next day and you're just like, I'm just going to stay up and play for the next 4 hours here before work.
Yeah. That's totally fair. Chad, what about you? What's that key thing that's like, this is an awesome story?
I think it's attachment, something that gets you going. And one of the things that we really haven't brought up, like we've talked about story, like so many of the video games that we play that we're like, oh my God, that was an amazing story. Well, it's an amazing story for a video game, but if you really took it apart and made a movie out of it, like it would be B or C movie at best, but because we get to interact with it and because we have some agency over the characters, it feels like so much better. I heard someone describe at some point that if you took I think it's Uncharted 4, like it's basically the story of National Treasure. Like, it's not even this high-end story, but because it's done so well and because it's sold to us so well, it's just such a nice, beautiful package. One of the things that's really, really important about it is how, over the last few years, how advanced we have become in not just voice acting, because this really isn't voice acting anymore. It's acting. It's mocapping. I think it's Tommy was talking about in the last podcast, your guys' last recording, about how, someone shifting their eyes, one of the characters shifting their eyes and looking, and all these things. That is because of I think it's Naughty Dog. They literally are scanning these people are acting it out on green screens. They have balls all over them, you know, and they're acting it out. But they're not. It's not just about the balls that are, you know, those dots and whatever. But they're actually scanning their faces and their emotions and their eyes. So that eye movement and those things, those are two actors on a stage doing that and selling that to us now. So the immersion value of acting, not just voice acting anymore, is so important. And you know, for us that we're getting. Actors like Nolan North and such that are really, really giving us great characters. It was such a telling point for me. I went back and I was playing Gears of War, the original one that's remastered, and that's kind of around that time when that and Halos and everything were really started to get some good stories and some good voice acting and everything. And you could tell in that one who was those canned voice actors. And then I don't know the voice actor's name, but whoever does Marcus Fenix, they're almost acting in different games. Some of them are just writing it in and phoning it in. And then he's in a totally different, he's in a movie. He's a movie actor. His voice is, has inflection and has emotion and everything. But then you go play Gears of War 4 and it's very cinematic and everybody is obviously mo-capped and there's so much more emotion that's conveyed to us as an audience. So you're able to buy into the character. So I think voice acting, I mean, a long way to go to say that voice acting and acting has been able to help us along with story and narrative to buy into games so much more than even, you know, 4 or 5 years ago we did.
Yeah. I think that's really mm-hmm. critical. I think technology is a huge part of the narrative driven video game ecosystem at this point. And it's just going to get better, you know, like that very much feels like where the push is. Even in, I think something that you said, it's key in there. A lot of these stories, Uncharted, I'll be the first to say it, as much as I love the Uncharted series, like those are cheesy storylines. Like they're not awesome stories and just riddled with plot holes. Like playing Uncharted 4, I just had this moment where I was thinking, after having that moment where I was like, oh my God, this is so immersive with how she was looking. Also had this moment of like, I just in gameplay killed 30 dudes, like killed 30 dudes. And like nobody cares, you know. Like, there's no. Oh,
Nathan Drake is a mass. Like, Nathan Drake is one of the mass murderers of our time.
Right.
Like, yeah. I mean,
not something that ever comes up.
Thousands of people throughout the four games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there's just those big gaping holes that you can get away with because it's a video game. Of course you gotta shoot people, that's what you do in a video game, you know. Like the Last of Us I think did a little bit better with it made encounters much more intentional than Uncharted has, but you know, even then it's still, you know, you get this disconnect between the narrative side and the gameplay side. I think we're starting to bridge that more. I think that may be the next big thing where like video game storylines are going, that the gameplay gets so intertwined. One of the franchises isn't the word, but the developers that Jamie and I talk about a lot are Quantic Dream, and we love the Quantic Dream games. And they do a really good job of that side of things. They're almost presented more in that Telltale fashion, where it's quick time events and dialogue choices, and it's not as a traditional gameplay mechanic as much. But it feels intentional. Every encounter is intentional, where Uncharted, most of the encounters are just shoot 'em ups, you know, like it's just, oh, and here's another group of enemies and you kill them all and then you get the next, you know, clip.
And that's something that's going on with Max Payne. Like, I love Max Payne, but it's I talked about it on the last show. Max Payne 3 is killing the group of enemies that you're supposed to kill. And then you have a couple cutscenes and then you kill some more people. That's what it is. And I think it started to change. Like, Tommy, I remember you talking about Fallout 4 and mentioning, and this is why I want to play it so much, but you were talking about Fallout 4 making decisions and those decisions actually mattering with what else was going on in the game. We've been talking about this for years with Grand Theft Auto and some of the other titles. But let's be honest, most of the time it really doesn't matter. You can do what you want to do and still kind of end up where you want to be. And I remember you talking about playing Fallout 4 with the Brotherhood guy as a sidekick. And then you did something and like that guy didn't want to work with you anymore.
Right.
And they're like, that's really cool. That's when we get there, it changes things.
Yeah. And that's that living world idea too, that Grand Theft Auto thing where it just feels alive. That's a hard thing to do, but it so helps with the story. So, last thing we'll finish off on this, but talking a little bit, we already kind of brought this up, but looking future wise, what is the next thing that maybe you see coming as far as storytelling goes for video games? Like, what's the next hurdle to overcome? I'll kind of open that up. Anybody who wants to jump in on that one.
I'll mention one thing, which I sort of feel is a limitation. You brushed on it before in terms of Uncharted and sort of a plot thing where it's sort of as good as the story and everything is, there are those moments that sort of pull you out of it. And for me, one thing that really did it was like Matt, the Mass Effect series. the story of Mass Effect is fantastic. Absolutely love Mass Effect. And even the gameplay, as much as I'll avoid going down the whole RPG discussion for now, but the gameplay and the story of Mass Effect have been really enjoyable. But one of the things I've really noticed is just how static the world actually ends up seeing. You'll see it when you're talking to NPCs and, you know, when they start to repeat dialogue, that's a big, you know, sort of immersion breaking thing that happens. When you'll go back to a location and it's the same NPC sitting in the same spot, just with the same pose. That was one of the things I felt with Mass Effect, as deep as this universe they've created, the world itself still felt quite static, and you really could see the limitations of the game engine and the game itself. So what I hope we can see with, you know, more computing resources, with more more resources thrown at developing these games, that we can actually create a more dynamic universe with more dynamic interaction with NPCs and that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's good. Anybody else want to jump in there? Future of storytelling and gaming?
Maybe a more... Like, the stories are very linear. It'd be nice to have those open-ended storylines where it can just... The story can evolve based on decisions, but that requires huge programming if you're to have those kind of... Yeah.
Yeah. What about... This is just in that conversation. It makes me think about something like No Man's Sky that we've talked about in different contexts. But that idea of a procedural universe, isn't that something, thinking about AI? Now, the voice acting in that side of it, I know, gets tricky with this. But that we could have procedural AI, procedural characters that could be completely different from game to game. That, like, you could play the same game over again and it'd be a whole new cast of characters, even. Something like that could obviously make it. I don't know. I'm just going off now. But that seems like maybe where the future is heading.
Yeah, I think that'd be fantastic. And I'm sure the first few generations will be, like, borderline awful and clunky, and we'll say this is horrible. But I'm hoping that it could be developed into something that would be pretty cool. Yeah,
and then with VR and haptics and everything else, that people just start living in video games and don't ever interact with the real world anymore.
Oh, hey, he is one right there. I wanted to talk about it. I hadn't thought about it, but VR is going to change a lot of stuff, because I think it's going to change what we do in terms of what we want from a game. For example, I had a chance to play some VR stuff this week, and all of the VR stuff that I mess around with were like educational type stuff, like going through the body and seeing how blood works and that type of stuff. I was really interested in that, and as I said through that, I'm like, this is really going to change the science class. And I didn't get bored of it, because it was interesting the way that they did it. Another one that I looked at went through the brain. And the last one that I looked at that was really cool, that will probably change the way that we do podcasts. If you haven't checked out I think it's called The Foo Show in VR. What these guys did was, the first episode, they talked with the Firewatch guys. And what they did is, it's basically an interview show, but they did it inside the Firewatch tower. So you're in the tower with the developers talking about their game, and you can walk around the tower and you can pick up all of the objects. And they're talking about the time that it took to make each object and how they did it and so on and so forth. And the tower was just gorgeous. And it's not like, I would do that once a week for a half hour in a different environment, because it's cool. Like, I'm not gonna I wouldn't want to make a habit out of that. I wouldn't want to spend a ton of my gaming time doing that. My point is the idea of what a game is about to change.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think VR at this point doesn't have a good grasp on how to tell a story in it because it's so new. Like it feels like there's either cool narratives that are very little games or games that are very little stories. And there's a few exceptions. The Portal stories is really fun and has a fun little narrative along with it. If you like kind of Portal storyline stuff, it's funny and goofy, whatever. But it does have the potential to radically change how storytelling happens in games. But it's also going to be incredibly difficult to figure out how to make that engaging because it's right. taking that idea of immersion to a whole new level. And so now the environments, I think, are easy to pull off in VR. I think characters are going to be incredibly difficult to pull off in VR because every nuance has to be right. It can't going back to the acting thing. It can't just be the voice. It's got to be every little bit of a character has to be spot on.
I don't know that it was easy to pull off the environment, but standing in that Firewatch tower and looking out and seeing an environment that if you play the game, you're in this environment. But one of the guys said, and I believe it, when you're playing the game, as opposed to this, it feels like you're looking at it through a bubble. Like being in that tower in VR is a whole different deal.
Yeah. As an aside, for all things good and holy, please give me Firewatch in VR. That's just a great narrative, great game, and lends itself so well to what VR does. I think it would be phenomenal. Right. I think that would be super cool in VR.
I was just going to say as well, I'm glad you brought that up, Jamie. I felt guilty now forgetting to mention it, but yeah, this Firewatch was just the way that they told that story and the way it unfolded. I absolutely love that game, and I know it's a bit polarizing with some people, but I thought it was fantastic.
I'm with you 100%. I thought it was phenomenal. Just a really, really cool way to tell a story. I wish there was more. I wish it was longer. I wish they would do more with it. If they put it on VR, I'd go back and play it in a heartbeat. I will at some point go back and play that game because it's so short. It won't take a ton of time. Good way. And I'll mention, too, something like a game like Inside, which I just played, that has zero dialogue to it at all. Still tells a story in such a wonderful way. There's other really cool ways to tell stories that are outside the cinematic narrative driven things like we've been talking about. Inside is a great story that you kind of get to interpret your own way because it doesn't tell you what to think about it, which is cool. So anyway, thank you guys so much for being here. I think it was a good discussion. I know this is something that's big on us. I know a lot of gamers play games more so for the social things like we talked about a little bit, really into Madden and Call of Duty and that kind of stuff, maybe not care about stories. We are two guys, you guys know this listening to the show, that love stories, that love those single player experiences, and so this is a fun conversation for us. So thank you for being here. Thank you for your contributions, obviously, for everything you guys do and for everybody else out there that's listening, for whatever you contribute. As simple as just listen to our show and hanging out with us, we love you guys. And if you want to participate in the roundtable, if you want to participate in other ways, go by the website gaminguncensored.com and click on that Patreon link to see different kind of levels of things that we're doing. This is a blast. We love talking to you guys. So again, thank you so much for being here.
Before we wrap up, we also have to mention that we have to say thanks for Chad. To Chad, I hate to do that, but we are the flagship gaming. We are the flagship gaming podcast of FanboyNation.com, and Chad gave us games this week, so
double win for Chad.
So well, I was listening to the last episode, and you said you hadn't played Batman, so I sent you a Batman code.
That's how that works. So we got to say thanks to Chad. We probably don't do it enough. They put up with a lot of crap from us,
you're screwing it up, Jamie. I mean, in the text, do I have to tell everybody how the cake is baked? Like, I text Jamie. I just said, Jamie, you know, he says, thank you. I go, no, Jamie, you have to talk so much shit to me. Like, I need you to talk shit to me and make fun of me or you know, call me names or whatever. Because I think it's hilarious. Like, that's how I am. I mean, that's whatever. But Jamie, you're failing.
Here's the thing, Chad. Let me just mention this to you, just so you know from now on. Okay, I will never say thank you for as long as we are on the network.
You can text me. Thank you. Like text me. Thank you. We have a great rapport that way.
If that's really what you want to do, man, I can do that. You do live in California. You do like some weird stuff. You might have a little maskist thing going on if you want me to make fun of you for the next 20 years.
That's how my humor works. I make fun of my friends, but I love you.
Okay, all right, fair enough. We can do that. You heard what he said, Tommy. We have it on tape. So here we go. We are so glad to be here. We hope you guys have enjoyed it. We love talking to you guys. And like Tommy said, if you want to be involved in this, it is real easy. Just go on over to the Patreon and we will hook you up because we like to do this.
It really is a lot of fun. It's the highlight of every month for us at this point. So it's super cool. So once again, thank you guys so much. Even you, Chad. Thank you, Chad. And with that, we are out.
Brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.